I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land upon which this recording takes place, the Wurundjeri and Boobalan people of Woodachup in the southwest Bujara region in Noongarbujja, also known as Margaret River. I acknowledge their continuing connection to the land, waters, and community. I pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hey there, welcome back to the Men, Sex, and Pleasure podcast. This is episode number 64. I'm your host, Cam Fraser. We're talking all things masculinity, sexuality, male bodies, and men's experiences of pleasure. And today, I have the pleasure of chatting with Beck Antonucci. Beck is an emotional well-being and personal freedom coach. She supports women to break through ineffective self-worth and body image stories, as well as activate their unique voice and live their most radically fulfilled and expressed lives. Through a range of different holistic and intuitive modalities, including trauma therapy, somatic response tactics, inner child connection, wounded ego healing, and more, Beck supports women to learn to love their vulnerabilities, to take radical self-ownership of the thing that they once thought made them unworthy in society's eyes, and transform their lives from the inside out. Together, Beck and her clients go on a journey of deep inner transformation and come to a place of true self-acceptance. Beck is a free thinker, embodied female thought leader, stigma fighter, public speaker, workshop mentor, founder of the online group programs Being Brilliant and True Transformation, and Perth-based Naked Awakening facilitator. You can find Beck on Instagram at Beck, that's B-E-K, Antonucci, A-N-T-O-N-U-C-C-I. So Beck Antonucci on Instagram, and on Facebook, she's Beck.Antonucci. And in this episode, we talk about Beck's personal journey with cheating, with herpes, with body image, and with online. She calls herself, used to be a Fitspo person online, so that kind of attention-seeking online behavior, and overcoming all that and really radically transforming the way that she shows up to be really authentic, and to explore sexual healing and to find that really deep self-love. And we also talk about how to navigate the world, both online and in real life, as a confident and sexually empowered woman and just person in general. So it's a really raw and vulnerable conversation, which is very enjoyable, and I hope you enjoy listening.
Purpose of foreplay is to cause the vagina to lubricate so that the penis can penetrate more easily.
During sexual intercourse between a man and a woman, sperms are placed in the vagina of the woman by the penis of the man.
Let me at this point make a clear-cut scientific statement. Masturbation is not harmful.
Cool. Well, let's dive in. And by diving in, I'd love to invite you to share a little bit about your journey. I know we spoke last time about your passion for self-development and your passion for personal growth as well. And you've got an amazing story. So I'd love to hear from you about your story. And today, what's lighting you up? What are you really passionate about in the world of self-development and personal growth today as well? I'd love to invite you to share.
Oh, today, my name is Beck Antonucci. I'm an emotional well-being coach for women. And what's lighting me up today is just allowing people to ask questions where they haven't given themselves permission to ask before, in spaces where they haven't given themselves permission to ask before. And obviously, you know, a big part of my journey, and I share a lot about the herpes virus on the internet. And at the moment, that's the thing that's most prominent in my space. That's I've put out to my audience every single day, please ask me questions. And all the questions that are being asked of me at the moment are around exactly that. So that's really where I'm deep diving. My journey, if we were to deep dive into it, just to touch on it, stem from being horrifically bullied in high school and then being assaulted by my first partner with a closed fist, and really me feeling unsafe in the world and going through a big body image journey to try and, I thought that me looking a certain way could get people to like, love, and accept me. And I thought that if you would accept me, then I would accept myself. So that was really my journey to I guess the unbecoming process that I went through to really understanding that for as long as I tried to get you to like, love and accept me, my power was always outside of myself and I kept manifesting pain into my reality. And that's one of my deepest truths for this lifetime for myself, is that avoiding emotional pain will only further manifest pain in our physical reality. And I kept getting slapped by the universe, just hit and hit and hit and hit until I was heard the call and realized that all those pains that I was experiencing was simply due to my avoidance, the avoidance of being rejected in school, the avoidance of being assaulted by a partner and feeling so unworthy. And that if I was good enough, pretty enough, skinny enough, blonde enough, any of the enoughness that I could have potentially been, then maybe that wouldn't have happened to me. I'm really deep diving into, why did I call all this onto my path? Why did I call the herpes virus into my life? Why have I been battling body image for over 10 years and disordered eating for over 10 years? And really navigating that it was not the external that I could fix, but if I went and was willing to face off with the internal and look at the thoughts and all the parts of me that I didn't want to acknowledge the shadow parts of me that I didn't want to see, that's where I started to go through my own healing process.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. And I said this before to you and I'll say it again. I love how open and honest you are and candid just about your journey and about what you've been through and what you're going through and what you're passionate about and what you want to speak about in terms of going forward. And I guess, like, because it's quite present for you at the moment, I'm wondering, let's dive into the herpes virus, if you're happy to do that.
Yeah, let's do it.
For people that don't know, what is herpes?
So the herpes virus is, some people would know it as cold sores. So there's a lot of people in society who do test positive for the herpes virus and are not aware of it. You can have HSV-1, herpes simplex virus 1, which will be the virus on your lips or on your mouth, and you can also get genital herpes, which is HSV-2. It is highly, highly, highly stigmatized. It is highly, highly, highly common. The reason that I'm so passionate about it is because when I first found out, I considered suicide. I've considered suicide twice in my life. Once when I was 14, when I was being bullied, and when I found out about my positive diagnosis. And I also believe that there would be suicide statistics attached to the herpes virus, because if I had have taken my life when I was 25, literally no one would have known. It would have just been like, oh, this beautiful girl with such great ambition took her life. None of us know why. And so I still, to this day, like, my body, if I was to ask, are there suicide statistics attached to the virus? I get a big full body yes. And that's why I show up every day and speak about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much. And I recognize that it's, you know, quite a heavy and vulnerable topic. And I'm wondering, what are people wanting to know when you kind of put the question out there, hey, ask me whatever you want. What are people asking you about the herpes virus?
So I guess the two biggest fears when it comes to the herpes virus, number one, who will accept me now? Who will ever love me with this? And then the second one is, okay, if I was to accept this part of me, the other fear is people really care about people. What if I was to transmit this to another person? So a lot of the women that I work with, not saying that I only work with women who test positive for the virus, but for some of them, yes, their big fear is, well, if I get a partner and he doesn't test positive for the virus, what if I was to give it to him? So they're really, what we're navigating at the moment is acceptance, ownership, and that fear around transmission.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are plenty of ways. I mean, I kind of know this answer being a sex educator, but I'm sure there are plenty of ways of mitigating the chances of transmission. And I was wondering if you were able to speak into a few of those.
So for me, and this has been a conversation, I always tell the woman or the man to check in for what feels really good for you. For example, I'm very pro-natural health, so I don't take antivirals while they can lessen the transmission rate. So for me personally, to be with a partner, and I am with a partner, if he wanted me to be on medication, that would be a no for me. But for some people, that's a yes. So I want them to ask themselves what feels good. For things like oral sex, I know there's things like dental dams. I've never explored and used them, but if it was a true fear for me, that would be a consideration. There's obviously things like condoms. I personally don't like condoms or latex. So again, for me, that would be a no. So what I always ask the person to do is, you know, I share a lot about the emotional aspect of the virus, the spiritual aspect of the virus, the medical aspect of the virus. I like to empower the client to empower themselves and always just checking in with what feels good for me. If I had a partner that wanted me to be on meds, it'd be a no. If I had a partner that needed to use condoms, again, it's a no. And making sure that you find a partner that's really in alignment with their needs and yours.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I like the, tackling the emotional and the spiritual side of the virus. And I was wondering if you were able to speak into what that entails.
So I always ask people, so when they come to me and they're like, this is my deepest shame. And I share with women and men that when you are consumed by the thought of it, it feels like it's everything. But my belief, it's the smallest piece of the self-worth puzzle, just a tiny piece of it. And my question to you is, if you're going through this experience right now, why did I call this? Like, if we are the creator of our reality, and I believe that we are, that means we are creating everything. We can't just create the great. If you want to say that you're the one that creates all the greatness in your life, you also get to own that the things that aren't so great, but maybe pivotal for your evolution, you called that in as well. So I believe that I manifested herpes into my life. It's been one of my greatest teachers. And I believe that some of our spiritual greatest spiritual teachers who love us the most come in as the demon, come in as the abuser, come in as the boyfriend that assaulted us or the bully, come in as the herpes virus. So my first question to you would be, why? Why did you call this in? I was abusing my body. I had been restrictive dieting, borderline anorexic, bulimic for years, laxative abuse. I used to pass out in a bathroom, you know, horrific scenes after taking two bottles of laxatives plus throwing up all over myself with a bruise down my face from passing out. I was hurting myself. Herpes virus came into my life. And when I remember when this happened, I was like, everything that I thought that all I had to offer was my appearance. And that might be the one way I could get someone to love me. And so once I received the virus, I literally felt like everything that I had that made me worthy was ripped from me. And I remember a voice when I was sitting on the beach saying, when, Rebecca, will you start to love yourself for who you are as a woman from within? And so that's my question to you. What is it here to teach you? For one of my closest friends recently, he came to me and he said to me, Beck, can we go for dinner? And then shared with me that this has happened to him too. He found out that he tests positive for the virus. And I said to him, I just want you to sit in the question of what was it here to teach you? And like, why did you call it in? And he goes, I didn't use my voice. In that moment, my instinct said no, and I still said yes. And the same thing happened for me. My intuition said no, and I still said yes. But herpes isn't the only place that you're not using your voice. Where else are you not using your voice in your life? And if this was the awakening that you needed to realize the pain that you cause yourself when you don't honor your intuition, when you don't activate your voice, maybe that was the lesson that herpes came into your life to teach you.
Mm. Yeah, thank you for sharing. And something here that I remember talking on a previous episode of the podcast to a guy called Courtney who also has tested positive for HSV and has a whole support program around that. Something that he kind of came to realize was that his, the way that herpes kind of manifested for him was every time now that he, because it's ongoing, it's lifelong, right? For people that have contracted the virus, the kind of learning that he had now is like the flare-ups that he gets are indications that something's kind of amiss for him physically or emotionally or, you know, spiritually. So he knows now that like if he is getting a bit of a flare up, then it's a sign. He uses it as like a indicator that maybe something's going internally, you know, off or something in his environment's kind of, you know, affecting him in a certain way. And he uses that as a way to then kind of readjust and bring himself back into alignment. And I'm wondering, has that been something that has kind of happened for you as well? What do you do to kind of manage those flare-ups?
Absolutely. I believe that the symptom is a sign, not a problem, but a sign. And if you're willing to look and understand where the symptom came from, you have the power to mitigate it as well. And so I've always been pro-natural health, very into fitness, very into organic eating, natural supplements, natural remedies. That's just been my life for such a long time. And so flare-ups have not been a problem for me. And I believe that that's through the power of my thought. I don't fear the flare-up. I believe that whatever we're fearing, we will manifest into our reality. So for the women that come to me, they're like, I'm so scared that the outbreak's going to come. I'm so scared that the outbreak's going to come. I'm like, the universe is a giant yes button. You say that I'm scared of the flare-up happening. The universe is like, yes, you are, and here it is. Or I want more money. Yes, you are. You're continuously in the space of wanting more money versus I have no fear around the flare-up coming. Last year, I know it's just words on the internet, but I was what felt like I was attacked by a group of women from America. And I opened my phone unexpectedly to a lot of hate mail, some death threats, and just really abusive and nasty comments on a lot of my posts. And it came out of nowhere. It was really unexpected for me. And I've still been in this process of healing the trauma and the sister wound around being bullied so horrifically in an all-girls school. And my inner 14-year-old was scared. It felt like I was being screamed at and attacked again. And even though my adult said it's just words on a mobile phone, these women are in, no one can hurt you. My little girl was so scared and my body had such a somatic stress response that all of a sudden I was like, something feels not right to me. And I thought I'd maybe cut myself or scratch myself shaving. And so I lifted up my leg in the mirror and I was like, wow, this is a herpes outbreak. My first one in 7 years. And in that moment, I was like, my body is incredible. Like, this is an amazing teacher. Herpes isn't the problem. Herpes is saying, hey, Beck, you get to go and deep dive into this wounded 14-year-old that still thinks that women are attacking her because you have become so stressed over simply words on a mobile phone that this physical stress reaction has caused an outbreak. So in that moment, I was just like, our bodies are literally miracles and such profound teachers if we are willing to listen.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like, to get to that point of like recognizing and reframing, what does a person have to go through to go from that, like, oh God, I'm afraid of this, like the stigma of it, like, oh God, like I'm worried about what's going to happen if my partner finds out, all this sort of stuff. What needs to happen in order to go from that to where kind of you are now, where Courtney is now, of like reframing it and treating it as like this, almost like a gift. I don't want to put that word into your mouth, but that's kind of like the way that you kind of framed it just then.
I think there's a process that's around forgiveness, ownership, and acceptance. And a big part when I say that to people is they think that that means making it okay or making what happened okay. And when I say that, I really believe, and this is just data collection from my own experience, it's not true numbers, but I believe that 90 to 95% of people probably received the herpes virus as a shock. It wasn't a partner sitting down face-to-face and saying, hey, I just want you to know I test positive for the virus. So if we were to engage in sexual intercourse, there's a potential that you might contract it. I believe that that didn't happen for most people. So when it comes as a shock and there's a lot of shame attached to it. When I say forgiveness, ownership, and acceptance, a lot of people think that that means making it okay, that they feel like someone wronged them or that I felt like my freedom of choice had been taken from me. And if I was to own it or accept it, that meant that it was okay that this happened. And so I'm not saying that we're making it okay or justifying it, but understanding that this is a gift in strange wrapping paper. And as the cards that you've been dealt, we've been dealt, we can't undo it. How can we start to own it and not make it mean something about us that's ineffective and not adopt an ineffective societal belief that might not be true and really challenge, like, where did this belief around herpes being so bad, awful, disgusting come from? And is it something that you really feel is true living with it? Is it true for you? In your experience of how people have responded to, if you've given them the opportunity to love you and hold you and see you in it and see you in your truth, have you given the opportunity to actually see you and accept you? Or have you just decided based on this ineffective belief system that everyone's going to reject you, everyone's going to judge you, everyone's going to make you feel unworthy because of it? And I promise you, if you were to challenge those beliefs and ask where they came from, maybe you realize that they're not true beliefs that you actually hold. So I would say challenge the belief, go through a forgiveness process for yourself and the person who gave it to you, because often there's a lot of resistance there and often there's a lot of blame, like he gave it to me and I was doing that. But really the person I was most angry at and the person I most needed to forgive was, if I was willing to go there, was myself. I was so wrapped up with projecting anger and hate and projection at the men. It was men's fault for so long. And the reason that I was so absorbed with projecting at others is because I could avoid looking at myself. Really, I was deeply angry at myself. Really, the person that I really got to give forgiveness to was myself. So forgiveness of yourself and the other person, and then ownership and acceptance. And again, that comes back to, for me, it comes back to, what was it here to teach me? Why did I bring it in? And looking at the blessings it brought versus all the things that you think it's taking away.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And there's like a challenge for that. And you kind of touched on it, is the societal messages and the stigma that's attached to herpes and the beliefs that we have around it. And I was wondering if you're able to speak into what some of those stigmas and beliefs and narratives that we have around maybe herpes and also STIs in general. Would you be able to speak into those?
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, before I received the herpes virus, I didn't know anything about STIs. And so for me, my experience of STIs was seeing jokes in movies or jokes in TV shows. Once you get it, you can only get it once, or just any kind of joke in a movie around the herpes virus. So I thought that it was bad. And once I realized that I don't even know where this belief came from. I have no knowledge around this. I don't really know. I'm not really super, super familiar about other STIs, STDs, because I've never had to come into contact with them. But it really was my lack of experience going to a private all-girls school that really gave us no information around STIs. I just thought you used condoms to not fall pregnant. And so for me, it's just everything, even the conversation that we were having before we started this podcast around circumcising young boys. It's, for me, I didn't understand until my mentor shared such a powerful conversation around it that I'd adopted a belief that was not my own based on society feeling one way. But if I was to truly sit in it and challenge it and ask where it came from, is it what I actually truly believe and feel, and is it how I truly want to live my life? Knowing now that I test positive for the virus, do I really want to feel like I should be silenced in shame? Do I really want to feel like I'm disgusting? Do I really want to feel like my sex life is ruined? No, no, and no. Okay, so what am I going to do about it? I'm going to be bigger than some bullshit stigma that exists because I'm not willing to live a suppressed life. I want a thriving sex life. I have a thriving sex life. I value being sexually expressed, and I'll lean more and more and more into that, which means leaning into the discomfort and the edges, which are facing off with societal stigmas, and as well, including if someone was to make a joke that I don't feel is right or feel like is shaming someone, whether it's around my friends. I remember 5 years ago being at a table and girls talking about Tinder, and I tested positive for the virus at the time. And one woman went, oh, no way. Don't go on Tinder. They'll all have herpes. And I just felt my insides die. And in that moment, on reflection, I wish that I had been bold enough and brave enough in the moment to say, actually, that's really hurtful and rude. Like now I would just be like, hey, do you want to say that to my face? Let's have a conversation about it. Why do you feel that way? Why are you judging everyone on Tinder? Why are you judging people who test positive for herpes? So really just challenging beliefs, challenging jokes, and challenging anything that makes you feel like a lesser person.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you shared to me last time that when you were using the dating apps, you put in your bio, like, I test positive for herpes, like, get over it and let's talk about something serious.
Yeah. I actually had some beautiful, beautiful men reach out to me on Instagram who had just met women who had disclosed to them, I test positive for the virus. Then they'd been talking to their mates, and their mates had sent them my Instagram, be like, I don't know anyone except for this chick in Perth. So I ended up having a few coffees because I thought to myself, I wish 7 years ago I had someone that I could speak to. So I had a few coffees with these guys. They're like, I don't know how to navigate it. I've never heard about it. I don't know what it is. And so I was thinking, these men are meeting these beautiful women. These beautiful women have the courage and confidence to disclose. The men don't know how to navigate it because they've never seen it being spoken about openly before. I was like, I'm not a herpes activist, but I will talk about it because it has such an influence on my life. Where could I put it to normalize it? And I was like, dating apps. So I created a profile on Hinge, Bumble, and Tinder, and just did in big block letters, I test positive for the herpes virus. Now let's move on to what's really important. Literally just to start it. And I said available for men and women. And I just did it so that my intention was, I hope people see it and think, what on God's earth? And the next time someone discloses to them, they think, hey, actually, it's more normal than what I realize. This other beautiful girl, she talks about it too. So it's actually okay. And for the women that were scared about disclosing, I wanted them to see, like, it doesn't have to be a big deal and it doesn't have to be a problem. And it opened my eyes up to realizing people are so much more accept. At the time, I was like, I'm bigger than this, but I actually didn't realize how accepting people are if we are willing to lean into our vulnerability and our honesty and give people a chance.
Yeah, I think that's like that's the barrier, you know what I mean? Like, that's where the stigma is stopping people from being like, let's talk about this, let's just normalize it and give people a chance to be accepting and to be loving and to be supportive. Like, because we don't want to talk about these things, we don't want to talk about sex ed, we don't want to talk about circumcision, we don't want to talk about any of this stuff to do with sexuality, it prevents us from having that received by someone with love and with compassion and with, like, understanding and respect. And all this kind of stigma stops us from sharing, and it also stops people from receiving that sharing. So I often feel like I feel like we do similar work. I try and normalize all types of conversations around sex and sexuality and sexual health. And so I love that the things that you're passionate about is just like, fuck, let's just get this out there. Let's just start talking about it. Let's just have conversations and show people that it's totally fine and acceptable and normal. And you're still a lovely, caring, lovable human being. I think that's like the, I would say upwards of 85% of the work that I do is just like normalizing people's desires or circumstances and situations. And I feel like that's probably a big part of what you do as well. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and it's amazing because I think the thing that we do is we create a story in our head that people won't accept this part of us. We decide it's a dark part or a shadow part or whatever you want to reference it to. But when we share that part of us, what I feel is most powerful, the reason people are so accepting is we all have parts. Mine might show up differently to what yours does, but the thought and feeling, the emotional attachment to it is very similar. So when I'm like, hey, this is a part of me that I really went through so much challenge around accepting and I thought it made me a lesser person because of, the person in front of me is like, yeah, I've gone through something really similar, not herpes, but I'm filling the blank of whatever it is. It gives them the space to be like, well, I can be transparent with this person because she's transparent with me. And that's why I love this conversation. That's why I love herpes so much. It's created so much space for people to share so much with me that I feel like if I hadn't had this experience, I don't know if I would have been able to resonate and relate on the same deep level.
Mm. And that's like the power of the internet as well, you know what I mean? Like social media, it's a bit of a blessing and a curse, you know? It gives you the opportunity to share openly about this and about anything really, and not only receive those horrible messages from women in America, right? But also to receive positive, beautiful, like supportive, kind messages as well. And it's like, how do you curate that? How do you cultivate like a positive online space? And I know you're quite present online. I know that's, you know, it's where you share a lot of your work and it's where I kind of originally came across you. And I'm wondering, how have you navigated personally those, you know, detrimental messages that kind of make you feel anxious and make you feel triggered, and maybe minimize or mitigate those and cultivate a supportive online space for yourself?
You know, I receive a lot of love on the internet and a lot of support and a lot of beautiful feedback all the time, every day. And so for me, it's just been around learning how to express. And then when I'm receiving those triggering messages, like for me, the women in America last year, that really just showed me my 2021 has been all about, for me personally, about healing the sister wound. Because my 14-year-old, if I was showing up in leadership or as a coach, fine. But without that, without the leadership or as a thought leader or a public speaker or any of those things, if I was just showing up in an all-female environment, I knew that my 14-year-old still existed. And so for me, it was about cultivating better friendships, deeper friendships, fully trusting women. And I know the sister wound exists for a lot of us. So for me, that trigger was actually a beautiful key to what I needed to and got to and am in the midst of working on this year. I don't believe that it can all just be praise and worship and you're so great all the time. My ego loves that. My personality loves that. And they also get to be the people that disagree with me and the people that say abrupt comments and then just witnessing what comes up now when people, there's certain things that get said to me that there's less charge than what they would have been 12 months ago. So every time there's charge around something, I'm just willing to look into that and ask what it is and why it's there for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Something that I'm mindful of that I don't get as much of that I know women get because I've spoken to women about it. I've had people on this podcast talk about it is like particularly talking about sexuality and sex online is like a lot of slut shaming, a lot of like just misogynistic, horrible messages. And I'm very grateful that like it's not something that I receive a lot of, but I know because I've spoken to women about it that that's something that they receive. And I'm wondering, is that, you know, I'm just going to hazard a guess here and say it's probably something you've come up against as well, but I wanted to ask if that is something that you've kind of noticed online.
Yeah, about 18 months ago, I went through this big, like I did my Naked Awakening facilitator training. There was a lot of nudity. It was beautiful. And I think nudity is beautiful. And I remember a few comments being like, no wonder you ended up with an STD with your namaste, free and easy attitude. That one stuck in my mind. And then a few parents coming and commenting saying it's disgusting that women think that you're inspiring with your with you being so slutty and promiscuous and owning that you've been. I went through a big phase of promiscuity and I own that and I actually love that aspect of me. When I wasn't sexually expressed, I would judge women who were. And I would call them sluts. I'm like, that's slut. Like, and all I would 10 years ago, I was so, I didn't understand that It was because I denied that aspect of me that I judged them so much. And so I love that part of my journey. And so I understand that that's people projecting their own stuff at me based on how they were raised, their religious conditioning. So I have received it. And I think just as a part of my, back then, 18 months ago, I was super triggered when I read it. And now I just, I have a giggle. And the more I love who I am as a person and accept my journey exactly the way it is, I'm like, oh, you can say what you wanted me. And it's probably more about you than what it ever was about me.
And I know you encourage women. I know you work with women to find their voice, right? And to kind of learn how to express. And part of that expression is our sexuality, right? And whether you want to show up that way online or not, like my opinion is that's kind of part and parcel of who we are as an individual, who we are as a human being. Like our sexuality is inextricably linked to our humanness. So if we're finding our voice and expressing ourselves in an online space, eventually, or part of that is going to be our sexuality in some way or another. And I'm wondering, with the women that you work with who are maybe doing similar things like a naked awakening or expressing their sexuality online, do you have any advice for them for managing or for handling and dealing with those kind of slut-shaming comments or those negative kind of comments towards women and their sexuality?
I think, you know, it comes back to understanding what you're, I think we had a conversation around this last time, always aligning with what our intention is behind everything that we do and realizing, you know, the people pleaser is such a big conversation with me and my women, and being a recovering people pleaser and always wanting to say yes, even if the truth of me says no, realizing that if I curate my expression in attempt to appease what I think you might like or want or accept, that's me subconsciously saying, well, you are denying yourself. And I'm not here to deny any aspect of me, including expressing my sexuality and how I show up. I go through Preston calls it Preston Smiles calls it seasons. So when I was going through like my really big naked stuff, that was a season for me. I'm not there right now. It doesn't feel aligned for me to show up that way online. But at the time, it was so in my space that that's how I had to be. And for me to not acknowledge that, that's a suppression of myself. And that's me denying a part of me. And that's essentially me saying no to parts of me. And I know what pain I manifest on my past when I say no to the truth of me. And I'm just not willing to do that anymore. So I would really encourage women to listen to, if they're willing to sit with themselves, listen to what they feel like they uniquely need, how they would love to express. If it feels edgy, amazing, that means we're growing. Like even at the moment, I'm like, oh, the past 3 months, I think I've sat a little bit in my comfort zone. Where are my edges? Where do I truly want to express? And what's a little bit challenging for me so that I can activate the truth of me to come alive and know that I can never get it wrong. Like that there is no really right or wrong. I can just acknowledge my truth, express it, learn from it, see how I feel, and just grow and evolve and expand.
What are some of your edges at the moment? What are some things that you're feeling into and wanting to push?
Well, I've started recording a podcast. So I'm deep into recording 2 to 3 seasons because I want to go back to back. I'm also interviewing in the podcast every few episodes because it's not all about herpes, and a lot of women are attracted to me because of that conversation. I want women to see a bigger picture than herpes. So every few episodes, there's like a powerful, sexy, gorgeous woman who is also a voice for the virus sharing about what she does. Navigating in-person events. The internet's become a place where I'm really comfortable. I feel like there's a layer of vulnerability, that layer of vulnerability is removed because the screen is there. So I find the internet a very non-vulnerable place for me. In-person is vulnerable. So more in-person events, more in-person workshops. For me personally, the sister wound is still super big that I'm leaning into more and more and more and more. And leaning even more into my sexual expression with my partner.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing. I resonate with a few of those things. And something for me that I've been kind of working through, I've probably been working through this for like the last 5 years is, I guess I wouldn't call it a brother wound, but I think it would be like a father wound. And like this, the way that it's manifested for me personally is like the need to, or the desire to impress like an older man, or like it doesn't have to be older in terms of like chronological age, but even like a guy who's like maybe a bit further along in the field than I am, or who's got like an authority over me in some sort of way, the kind of the little boy, the little, you know, child desire for me to be like, look at me, look at, like, be proud of me. And so I've expressed this to people like Tully and Tim, who are good friends of mine, when I first met them about 5 years ago, and I kind of saw them up here on a bit of a pedestal when I was kind of new to the space and new to Perth. And I, when I was, you know, cultivating a friendship with them, I suppose, a relationship with them to begin with, I really had to navigate this internal space for me of like wanting to impress these guys and wanting to like wanting them to like respect or be proud of me in some sort of way. And so that's been a journey that I'm kind of still on, and I still notice when I'm hanging out with a new group of men, or if I'm in a, if I'm, you know, if I meet a colleague who I really respect, I have to try and like just kind of be mindful of that desire to like, hey, look at me, like, you know, pay attention to me sort of energy that I know I can drop into very, very easily, because it's something that is, you know, a core kind of wound of mine. So so that's something I'm working into. And as I step into fatherhood myself, I'm like really mindful of not transferring that onto my son, onto the little boy that's coming through. And yeah, kind of navigating that space. So I resonate with the sister wound, because I feel like that's a bit of a brother slash father wound for myself.
I had a similar conversation about this with my mentor, Preston, because I have that similar thing. I love with someone that I deeply respect, when they tell me that they're proud of me, I'm like, oh, that's like my favorite thing to hear. And before I started my coaching business, I was completing and closing an online activewear. And my dad was, all of his fears came up around me ending a business, not knowing what I was going to do next, what the hell is online coaching. And so we had a big argument, and I told him, please do not talk to me again until I'm successful, because I do not want your fears impacting how I show up. And we actually live quite close to each other. We live about 5 minutes away. So every day for 6 months, I was like, I'm going to stand my ground. I'm not talking to him, because it just ends up in an argument. He'd walk past my house and walk past my house and walk past my house, but not look at the window. And in the meantime, I was building my business, and it took off really quickly. And 6 months later, he like looked up at the window, and I could tell he wanted me to come out and say hello to him. And I hate fighting. And as I ran down the stairs to say hello to him, I literally heard my little girl come out of, like, it's like I was witnessing myself. I'm watching myself thinking, what the F are you doing? As my little girl ran up to him and was like, Dad, Daddy, my business is going really well. And in that moment, I even said to Preston, I'm like, who am I? I literally work with women on the internet. And I was like, I watched a seven-year-old child run down the stairs, call her dad, Daddy, and tell him, Daddy, my business is doing good. Like, please tell me I'm great now. And he was like, Beck, can't beat biology sometimes. Like, I know you want to be this fully enlightened being with all of your power inside, and you never hand your power out to anyone. And sometimes little girls love to hear their dad telling them that they're proud of him.
Yeah. I love that. And I totally agree. I think there's like, and there's healing in that as well, you know, like there's healing in dropping into that and allowing, and all the things that you were sharing before, like accepting it, acknowledging it, like just kind of owning it and being like, cool, that's probably something that I'll, you know, need to navigate for the rest of my life. It'll be something that's like ingrained in me, and to then like mindfully bring that in. You know, if I do something that's worthy of respect and acknowledgement and praise, and someone who I, you know, hold a lot of respect for in the community says, hey, loved what you did here, like super impressed by that, can I fully receive that and be like, thank you, you know, I appreciate that, rather than it triggering this kind of wounding in me to like, oh, I need more, you know, or whatever that kind of manifests as.
I love what you just said then about, can I actually receive it versus I need more of it. I need him to tell me he's proud again. Can I literally be in the receivership of like hearing it and letting it land for me, which I think is.
And something you shared before is like that layer of vulnerability kind of being stripped away from being in an online space. And I definitely resonate with that. And I think I shared this with you last time we spoke, but my tendency is, I know because I've been picked up on this by my fiance, by other people, is in the online world, if someone kind of says something that I disagree with, or they disagree with something that I've posted and they kind of call me out, or they share like a strong opinion, what I have a tendency to do is like hide behind the facts and the figures and the journal articles and the academic language, and to like put forward that part of myself, the kind of research oriented part of myself, and to cite some research and to cite some, you know, studies, rather than kind of bring another part of me forward, which is like, you know, that fucking hurts, you know, like, you know, I'm sharing a piece of myself here. I'm trying to do good. And you're like, you know, calling me out and saying, listen, and so instead of bringing that emotionality piece, I oftentimes hide that a little bit and I put forward like the academic, you know, I put my academic hat on and I kind of wear that when I talk to people online. And so something that I'm really trying to navigate at the moment, this has been something I'm trying to do for the last year, is just kind of balance those two things. Like, can I still be, you know, solid and grounded in the stuff that I'm sharing and make sure it's accurate and relevant, but also just bring a little bit of me into that sharing as well, and bring some of that emotion and vulnerability and insecurity as well. Like, there's insecureness there, and just kind of like bring a little bit more of that into that sharing. So that's something I resonate with.
What is the resistance to letting that emotion piece come forward?
Yeah, I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. Like, I think it's I think it's because I see it online and it triggers me. If someone is like only emotional and only speaks from their emotion and like, and then shares something, you know, from that place of emotionality, which is like incorrect or which is inaccurate, like I value accuracy and like information that's correct and nuanced. And oftentimes when I see, and I see it in myself as well, but you know, when someone shares from that place of pure emotions and just kind of shows up in that way, oftentimes nuance and inaccuracy and data gets thrown out the window, which is a big value for me. Like education, like that kind of written education is something that I hold in high esteem. And so I kind of, yeah, I get triggered by it. I'm like, fuck, you're being illogical, like you're being like, you know, it just, and so I notice it, that it triggers me. And I think that's, again, if I'm like journeying through this, it's like the valuing maybe like the quote unquote masculine way of doing things rather than the feminine way of doing things. And that's something I've spoken to a few people about as well, as like societally, culturally, we kind of accept the kind of logical, rational, masculine approach to things, and we kind of denigrate or we dismiss the, you know, the feminine, flowy, kind of intuitive approach to things as well. And I definitely struggle with that as well. That's something that I've kind of had to acknowledge in myself and tap more into my intuition, tap more into my emotionality in an offline space as well, not even just online. So it's still something that I'm kind of processing and working through. And the way that I've started to do that is intentionally with my fiance, like talk more into my emotions, talk more into my vulnerabilities and insecurities, and then even show up with my friends a little bit differently. Like, say, like what I was just sharing with you before about Tim and Tully, like owning and acknowledging like, hey, this is kind of how I felt, and this is like what I'm kind of journeying through, and just kind of being witnessed and held in that, and almost like having this like, it's okay, this permission piece to be like, that's fine, like you're not, like we don't, you know, like we care, but you know, it's not a big deal, you know, it doesn't really matter. And to kind of have that charge taken away, is, I think that's what you said before, is like these things that really did trigger me before, kind of slowly that charge is being taken away. And I noticed that the shift in my language online is starting to move. And especially as I become a father, become a parent, like I want to speak more into that. And I know that's going to be from a place of lived experience, because I'm not a childhood specialist, so I'm not going to be able to speak from a place of like academic knowledge on that. I'm going to speak from like, here's what I'm doing, you know, and here's how it's feeling. So I'm nervous but excited about kind of like bringing that into my work as well.
That's exciting.
It's very, very.
It needs uncertainty.
Right, I know. And there's a piece here, because I want to be mindful of like my audience online, especially the podcast, is predominantly male. It's predominantly men. And I know you don't work exclusively with women, but you work, I think, predominantly with women. Is that kind of fair to say?
I hold powerful space for men, and most of my clients are female.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, and one of the reasons why I wanted to invite you onto the podcast was kind of for men to hear from you and to hear from a woman who's, you know, showing up this way online and who's kind of almost like on the front lines of dealing with shit online and kind of being open and honest about it. And so I wanted to kind of put this question to you, just invite you to share whatever's coming up for you, is what is it that you would like men to know about women like yourself?
That we don't need to be understood, but we love being celebrated and seen and encouraged and acknowledged. I think with my process around everything that I've done online, some people don't understand it. I don't need you to understand why I talk about herpes and sex on the internet, but it is true for me that I need to. And so if you can understand, like celebrate that, that that's the fullest of my expression and that my intention is pure, and to support people to love and accept themselves more so that they can create deeper relationship with themselves and then deeper relationship with others. It doesn't need to fit your paradigm of what's right and wrong, but it's true for me. And that's why we do it. It's not attention seeking. It does create attention, but there's a deep purpose for it. And if you're willing to see past maybe the trigger and see the beauty that's on the other side of sharing these things, even my new partner, some of his friends are like, what are you doing, man? She talks about herpes on the internet. And he was like, she's helping a fucking lot of people. Like, so I support that and celebrate it. He doesn't need to understand it, but to be celebrated in it, knowing that it serves a greater purpose and it creates deeper freedom for myself and permission to be more of me. And all I want, the relationships in my life that I'm creating, is just other people who are giving themselves permission to be fully themselves. Because the more expressed you are, I'm like, yes, I want to lean more and more and more into mine, which is like my greatest edge, to continually lean into the fullest expression of me.
Yeah, beautiful. And something you shared before, and I wanted to ask you about this reframe for you personally, is you shared that you were seeking attention, right? Through physical appearance. Like, you were like, that's the way I get validated. That's like what I'm kind of looking for. And then to get to this point now where you're sharing that, look, it's not to seek attention. It attracts attention because it's kind of controversial and taboo and stigmatized. And when I share about it, people are like, you know, get triggered by it. How do you go from one to the other? What takes you from this place of like, I'm doing this for attention, to like, no, my intention is pure, but it's attracting attention because of what I'm sharing?
So at one stage, a past version of me wanted to be a fitspo. And so I was eating the broccoli and the chicken and taking the lingerie shots in the gym once my body had the six pack and in her G-string. And I used to post those photos, and it was for attention. I knew it was for attention, and yet what I was actually searching for was safety, because I felt like if you liked, loved, and accepted me or thought I was beautiful, then you wouldn't hurt me, because I'd created a lens view of the world that women are emotionally and physically unsafe, men are emotionally and physically unsafe. So if you could look at that woman who's posted, like the old version of me, my housemates have pictures of me. They print them and stick them around the house to make fun of me. Very funny. But if you can look at that woman and be like, oh, look at this sexy but slutty, attention-seeking, so-and-so, and be like, hey, that woman is so deeply wounded. She thinks that people are going to hurt and harm her, that she's changed her body so much in attempt to get someone to love and accept her, not to like validate her ego, but beyond the validation, which is like a drug. It's like drug addiction, alcoholism, sugar. Attention for me was an addiction. When I got it, I was like, I feel I'm not bullied and people like me. It was empowering. And then it would be taken away. So then I'd have to continually work for it. If you could look at that woman and think, that's actually a hurting person who doesn't feel safe in this world. And then, and for me, it was just a process of knowing that validation and attention was temporary. And I was never truly loved for who I am. And it was exhausting. I was so tired. I was having this conversation when I was recording one of my podcast episodes yesterday with a woman who also came out publicly on Facebook about testing positive for the herpes virus. And we're talking about our experience afterwards. It was just like all a lightness of, I don't have to try to be anything other than who I am anymore. I don't have to go to the gym and eat broccoli to have a six pack so that someone might find me sexy enough. So then when I finally disclose, maybe I'd be pretty enough for them to accept this dark part of me. I can just be like, F this, take all of these heavy masks on that were exhausting because they were never the truth of me. I'm literally me now. And so if you don't like me, you don't like me. If you don't accept me, that's fine as well. But I'm in a place where I work to like and accept myself. I don't have to try to be something that I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. And do you think there's, just from your own personal opinion, do you think there's a lot or just a significant amount of that mentality in like the fitness inspo industry of like the need to seek validation and acceptance. And I think you said like, love and acceptance.
I can't go into those kind, like a fitness first kind of gym or a good life. I can't walk into it because the energy feels so, it feels like hurt souls searching for answers externally, not willing to look within. I know it's probably a part of my experience that allows me not to be able to hold the space for it. But things like fitness selfies in the mirror, I mean, I was that person. I can't emotionally handle it, and I feel like it's a form of avoidance.
Yeah. And I also think there's like that same mentality in kind of other industries. And what I'm alluding to here, I suppose, is like the sexuality industry as well, the sacred sexuality industry. I think there's a little bit of like, I don't want this to come across as like jaded or judgy, but I think there's a little bit of hey, let's take like the sexy photos. I've seen like, you know, all genders do this in the sexuality space, but like, let's go out into the woods and take a sexy photo and like share it online. And it's kind of the same. I get the same energy from it. Like it's not in front of a mirror wearing, you know, in a gym, but it's like having a photo taken in, you know, up the forest, you know, with, you know, your, I don't know, with your body out or with your cock out or whatever it is. And like, and I kind of experimented with that. I went and did a photo shoot in the woods and I was like, you know, I'm going to put a flower crown on and like get my shirt off and kind of feel into like how this feels for me personally. And it was interesting. It was enlightening for me. I learned a lot about like, does this feel right for me? Do I kind of like, what intention am I doing this photo shoot for? And like for me at that time, that was the time that I did that shoot, was I was really trying to dive into like the lover archetype. And so I like went out and like I said, I put the flower crown on, I was wearing a skirt, just kind of got into the woods, had some makeup on and you know, had some glitter and things like that. And so like that was my kind of journey into like that sensuality side of things, my first ever photo shoot as well. So I kind of had like this idea behind it. But I just think there's a little bit of that mentality of like, yeah, it's not in a gym, it's not in front of a mirror, but it still has that same energy and you're posting it. I feel like anyway, that's the kind of vibe that I get with that same mentality of like, I need that little bit of attention. I need that little bit of validation. I need that to seek that.
I think when I see it, I'm just like, if I reflect on my own process, I had to be that to become this. And so for me, it's like potentially I'm projecting on my who I used to be at them, understanding that that's a part of their process that feels like a part of their expression right now and a part of their evolution for wherever they're going.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if I like, and the way I try and approach this, like if I can hold that, if I can be like, hey, it's still an expression. It's still a part of who you are. It's like, it doesn't matter what part of it is. It's still a part of you as a human being. And this is your expression. This is how you're showing up online. You're not like, not hurting anyone, it's not doing any damage to anyone. Like if I can kind of hold that energy for people, like that kind of that reduces the feeling of like judgment or whatever I have, whatever projection I kind of notice that I'm putting out there. If I can kind of hold that love and compassion for them, just as I try and do for anyone that I interact with, then it kind of brings me back into like, okay, cool, I can handle this. I'm not trying to draw away from anyone's experience.
And for me, like hindsight is powerful. When I look at younger Beck, I'm like, I wasn't empowered. I was lost. I was searching for answers outside of myself. I didn't feel safe. I didn't know any of that at the time. At the time, I was like, I'm eating chicken and broccoli and everyone's telling me I look hot. This feels great. Like on a really surface level, I literally felt empowered in that moment. And when I actually witnessed that past version of me and I know what process she was in, I wasn't consciously aware of that at the time. I wasn't like, oh, I've been hurt and harmed by women. I feel emotionally and physically unsafe. That's why I'm dieting, because when you give me acceptance, then I feel not only validated, but I've got a sense of safety temporarily. You're not going to hurt me. I didn't know any of that was going on. And so it's not until I've been through the process, come out of the process, actually am in the work and understand why human, like I'm obsessed with human behavioral psychology, why we do these kind of things, that I look back and I completely understand everything I did. But in that moment, that version of me had no idea.
Yeah. 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 I think it's an interesting, Yeah, I think it's an interesting beast, you know, social media, like the way that we show up, and then also people's like perceptions of how we're showing up. Like, I could be totally wrong. In fact, I probably am totally wrong reading into the way that people are sharing online, because there's that screen in between, right? And it's almost, I would say it's almost impossible to 100% like be received authentically online, because you're not there in person with this person who's sharing something. You're reading it through a filter of your own kind of perceptions, and there's that disconnect inherent in any social media. So there's always going to be that like misalignment, I feel, whether it's like you can try and minimize that as much as possible by showing up in a certain way online, but there's always going to be that slight misalignment because you've got that medium in between the two of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just mindful of time, Beck, and I'm wondering, is there like a nugget of wisdom that you'd like to share, or like some words you'd like to end with for, I'm going to say for women that might be listening that are feeling a little bit maybe inspired, a little bit intimidated, a little bit like, you know, they want to kind of voice themselves a little bit more, but they're not really sure what to do. Is there any advice you have?
Oh, I mean, I think my advice would be the same for women and men. My truth is still the same, and that the avoidance of emotional pain will only further manifest pain in your physical reality. So if you feel like you're continuously getting whacked with something that you don't feel like you asked for, I would ask you, what are you avoiding? What are you avoiding facing off with? And that activation of your voice or your truest self-expression, I would sit and even write a letter to, or write a visualization of the most expressed version of you, because my expression is very different to Cam's expression. Some people don't desire to be expressed on the internet, and that's not what expression's all about. There are some people who are very expressed on the internet. You meet them in person, they're quiet as a mouse. So I would ask you, what is my truest, fullest self-expression? And write her or him down and describe him, what it feels like. Even for me, leaning into my edges and my expression sexually, I don't just practice that when I'm with a partner. I practice that, write that down. Like, what is it that I'm leaning into that's edgy and scary for me? What is it that I want to say? How do I want to be? How do I express? How do I want to feel? And really, if you can visualize it, it's because he or she exists within you. And then how can you give her or him permission to feel safe enough to come out? And it's only, and that requires courage. I think a lot of people think, I'm going to be fully expressed when I'm confident. And clients will come to me and think behind closed doors, Cam and Beck can work together and cultivate all the confidence, then go out and step out and do the thing and be confident. Well, that's the biggest lie. We're going to talk about all the things and, you know, go through the repatterning of all the ineffective beliefs and create all the worthiness to do the thing, say the thing, express the thing, whatever your thing is. But you're not, I promise you, it's likely you're not going to feel confident when you first do it. And it's going to feel super edgy and super scary. And somatically, your body's going to have a little meltdown and your voice is going to be shaking and maybe your hands are quivering and all the things. And you will realize on the other side of doing the thing, whatever your thing is, nothing bad happened. In fact, it was received beautifully. And the most powerful part of it is you were in alignment with your truth and you gave yourself permission to be and express all of you. And so in the repeated act of doing the courageous thing, that's where you build the courage to lean more into activating your voice. That's where you build the confidence to lean more into the act of using your voice. And that's where it starts to become something that you just naturally do. So that's probably my, I would write her or him down and ask what he or she is doing and how it feels to be him or her.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing, and thank you so much for spending an hour chatting with me. Like I said, you know, I had an enjoyable time chatting to you the other week, and I'm enjoyed this chat as well, and I'm looking forward to having some future chats and diving into a few other things as well. There's so much that I want to ask you and talk to you about, but you know, time doesn't permit, so I'm happy to organize another time to have a chat with you if you're open to it.
Yeah, I was thinking, oh my God, we haven't dove here and we haven't dove here. But we have so much to keep talking about. This will be a 9-hour podcast.
I know. I feel like that after most of my podcasts. I'm like, yeah, God, we could just keep on going Joe Rogan style for the next 5 hours. But we'll tie a bow in it now, and we'll revisit it at a later date if that's okay with you.
Amazing. I would love to.